Comfort Ye My People, an article by Brother Peter Forbes that appeared in the Testimony for May 2014 special issue on Isaiah. While Handel's setting of Isaiah's words, Comfort Ye, in his oratorio Messiah, is well known and much loved, the biblical background is probably far less well known. Handel's arrangement of the words of Isaiah is lovely. However, God's teaching concerning comfort in Isaiah is more so. The biblical exposition presents a full picture of God's care for his children. How does God comfort his people? In Isaiah's day, the threat was Assyria. During Hezekiah's reign, the Assyrians had taken King Hoshea of Israel captive and had overrun Samaria. The siege of Samaria was protracted, for in the fourth year of King Hezekiah, Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it, and at the end of 3 years, Samaria was taken. From Jerusalem, Hezekiah watched the siege for those 3 years, probably expecting that Judah would be the next target. But what would Hezekiah have been hoping? God had already said, I will ease me of mine adversaries and avenge me of mine enemies. The word translated ease is elsewhere translated comfort. But could Hezekiah be comforted in the hope that God would not allow the Assyrians to take Jerusalem? Ahaz had had to cope with the combined forces of Syria and Israel, but he was told that the riches of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria shall be taken away before the king of Assyria. Of course, Ahaz's next concern would be his own security. The prophet advised him on that topic, saying of the Assyrian, he shall pass through Judah, he shall overflow and go over, he shall reach even to the neck, and the stretching out of his wings shall fill the breadth of thy land. Although this did not happen in Ahaz's days, his son Hezekiah saw the fulfillment of these words, for in the 14th year of King Hezekiah did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. But would Sennacherib also take Jerusalem? That was the question. Isaiah had implied that he would not. He shall pass through Judah. Could Hezekiah believe that? Did he believe it as the Assyrian relentlessly advanced on Jerusalem? Maybe Hezekiah needed encouragement. Maybe not. Perhaps he had already taken confidence in believing Isaiah's words about the Assyrians only reaching to the neck. Whether Hezekiah was in need of encouragement or not, he got it. Comfort ye, my people, saith your God. Whether Isaiah was the one being told to comfort God's people, or whether Isaiah was being told to tell Hezekiah to comfort the people, may not be so important, because Hezekiah took the words of Isaiah to heart. Hezekiah spake comfortably, that in the margin has to the heart. Hezekiah spake comfortably unto all the Levites that taught the good knowledge of the Lord. Although these words were spoken by Hezekiah some 6 years before Hoshea was taken into captivity, nevertheless, they give us an insight into his faith in the words which Isaiah wrote about Assyria and Judah. Doubtless, Isaiah, the contemporary prophets, and Hezekiah were not the only ones lamenting the situation in Jerusalem when the Assyrians were working their way through Judah, even to the neck, which should be taken to mean Jerusalem. They would be watching and wondering as the Assyrians besieged the city. What would happen next? How would God react to the Assyrian blasphemy when they demanded, who was there among all the gods of the other nations that could deliver his people out of mine hand, that your God should be able to deliver you out of mine hand, thus demoting Yahweh to nothing but a territorial God made with men's hands? Hezekiah's response was to send Eliakim to Isaiah. Eliakim recounted to the prophet that Yahweh had been blasphemed, saying, "It may be the Lord will hear the words of Rabshakeh, whom the king of Assyria, his master, had sent to reproach the living God, and will reprove the words which the Lord thy God hath heard. Wherefore lift up thy prayer for the remnant that is left." By reproaching Yahweh, the Assyrian had sealed his own fate. His direct challenge prompted Yahweh to move Isaiah to say, "Thus saith the Lord, be not afraid of the words that thou hast heard, wherewith the servants of the king of Assyria blaspheme me." We gain an insight into the mind of a man lamenting the pathetic state of forsaken Jerusalem when we read the Lamentations of Jeremiah. Although Jerusalem did not fall in the days of Hezekiah, we can nevertheless imagine the sorrow and mourning of those in Jerusalem who anticipated her fall. They would be aware of the rebellion of the people as well as the faithfulness of Hezekiah. And from a human viewpoint, Jerusalem would inevitably fall to the might of Assyria, the fenced cities of Judah having already fallen to him. However, having heard the encouraging words of Isaiah, Hezekiah then spoke encouraging words to the Levites. Doubtless they would in turn have communicated those encouraging words to the people in the city. And through the prophet, God confirmed them. The destroyed cities of Judah and the denuded land would flourish. As Isaiah said, "The Lord shall comfort Zion. He will comfort all her waste places, and he will make her wilderness like Eden and her desert like the garden of the Lord." When the time of the Assyrian siege of Jerusalem ended, joy and gladness would be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody. The challenge that the Rabshakeh had set Yahweh would show who was the only true God, and the people had shunned the Rabshakeh's invitation. "Make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me, and eat ye every one of his vine, and every one of his fig tree, and drink ye every one the waters of his own cistern." Listen to a contemporary prophet moved by God to state what he was going to do, saying that he would sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid. In contrast to the fear they felt listening to the Rabshakeh while they were trapped in the city, they trusted Micah's words. His promise of a time when none shall make you afraid carried a guarantee, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts hath spoken it, which contrasted markedly with the vain boast, "For thus saith the king of Assyria." Daniel, on a later occasion, voiced a principle that has always been true. "The living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth over it the basest of men." It was all down to Judah recognizing who was in control of their destiny. The prophet Isaiah confirmed their confidence when he spoke God's words, "I, even I, am he that comforteth you," adding the question, "Who art thou that thou shouldest be afraid of a man that shall die, and of the son of man that shall be made as grass?" Despite the bluster and words of the Assyrians, they were but men. They were mortal. And when Sennacherib was come into his house of his god, they that came forth of his own bowels slew him there with a sword. In contrast, Yahweh is from everlasting to everlasting. And the choice between what we can see and what God has said is the perpetual choice. It started in the Garden of Eden and is with us today. On hearing the words of the serpent, whom she could see, "Ye shall not surely die," Eve had to decide whether his words were more credible and more reliable than the words of God. "But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die." It is easy when we are not under pressure to acknowledge that our Father is always more reliable than any human wisdom, but when we are under pressure, how may we ensure that we still have the same awareness of his faithfulness and reliability? And such a confidence will be based on experience. We all know people who always keep their word. People who, given a task, always perform that task. But this confidence is built up over time, during which a relationship develops as we get to know the person in question. And the same is true of God. We need to develop a trusting relationship with him. If we have never placed our confidence in him, then we are unlikely to have any experience of his reliability. We may know that others, in the Bible particularly, have experienced his reliability, but unless we can translate this knowledge into our own personal experience, it remains just a theory. So our confidence in him grows and develops according as we place our trust in him. We should not wait for a crisis to put this into action. Hezekiah appears to be a man who worked daily to put his trust and confidence in Yahweh. Then when the crisis came, he was prepared. This is powerful exhortation for us. Let us strive to get to know God in our day-to-day life and build our trust and confidence in his saving grace. The siege was real. The fear also was real. The inhabitants of Jerusalem went to bed each night, not knowing what the morning would bring. But one day, when they rose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. The Syrian threat was gone in a night. So the prophet said, "Sing, O heavens, and be joyful, O earth, and break forth into singing, mountains, for the Lord hath comforted his people." Judah's initial enthusiasm and joy at the demise of the Assyrian and the removal of the threat might easily blind them to the transient nature of that deliverance, for after all, they too would eventually die. But Yahweh sees beyond the immediate needs of his people. The inhabitants of Jerusalem were encouraged to rejoice too, that Yahweh was also concerned with the redemption of his people, saying through the prophet, "Bring forth into joy, sing together, ye waste places of Jerusalem, for the Lord hath comforted his people, he hath redeemed Jerusalem." And if the people were willing to look beyond the deliverance from the Assyrians, they would find that their God was offering something even greater. He was offering the sure mercies of David, which speak of resurrection to eternal life. Paul explains this when speaking of the resurrection of Jesus, and as concerning that God raised him from the dead, now no more to return to corruption, he said on this wise, "I will give you the sure mercies of David." When Judah returned from Babylon, prophets were sent to encourage them. The return from Babylon was a guarantee that eternal salvation is certain. Zechariah gave this assurance, quoting the words of Isaiah, "And the Lord answered the angel that talked with me with good words and comfortable words." Zechariah here draws on the words of both Jeremiah and Isaiah. Jeremiah had said that when the 70 years captivity were ended, God would speak his good word in causing Judah to return. And Isaiah had repeatedly spoken of the way in which Yahweh would comfort his people, as we've considered above. As already indicated, the big picture is salvation from sin and death. Isaiah spoke of one who was anointed by God and would proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God to comfort all that mourn. That man is Jesus Christ. For in speaking these words as he read from the scriptures in the synagogue in Nazareth, he said, "This day is this scripture fulfilled in your ears." The focus Jesus has, and by implication his disciples also have, is Zion. Jesus indicates this when he says, "Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted." The mourning is for Zion, as can be seen from the way that the prophet speaks of comfort. God will appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he might be glorified. Our eternal salvation from sin and death is bound up in his purpose for his land, his city Jerusalem, and his people Israel. The time will come when God will create Jerusalem a rejoicing and her people a joy. Those whose hearts have joyfully anticipated that time will be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. The city that had been afflicted, tossed with tempest and not comforted, will be restored to glory and beauty. The prophet here describes this restoration. Behold, I will lay thy stones with fair colours, lay thy foundations with sapphires. This real event, in a figure, speaks of the immortalized servants of God. John describes in similar terms the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. So we are left to consider, from where does our comfort come? In whom do we place our trust? Is our confidence and trust in the tangible, yet transient things we see around us? Or is it with the eternal God and his eternal plan and purpose? Are we frightened by what we can see to the degree that we become so overwhelmed by these temporary things that we are blind to the invisible eternal God? Hezekiah's confidence was in the invisible God, and he was blessed for that confidence. He knew his God, and so was able to trust him. Do we just know about God, being able to describe his character, plan, and purpose? Or do we really know him through lived experience? We do not wish to be amongst those who profess that they know God, but in works deny him. Surely we desire to be like Hezekiah, who, truly knowing his God, could trust that he would save his children.